behalf of our Lagos River Community Board, thank Russell, very grateful. I think he's doing such a great job. And Russell, we really appreciate it. And let's welcome Russell Pratt.
Thank you, sweetheart. Thank you very much. Yeah, she got me a small one. You give me a large one if you can. That'd be great. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I am a member of the Carl Gables group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found it necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981, and I'm grateful to God, to this fellowship, to some fantastic sponsors and mentors and that I've had and that I continue to have. And it's a privilege to be here, and it's a privilege to be asked to share here and do a step series for you guys. You've been very gracious, and I appreciate it. This is part of 12-step work for me. There's many different ways of doing 12-step work. Thank you, sweetheart. And this is one way. And, you know, they say, you go ahead and leave that there. This is fine. It's fine. You know, they say A is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door. And I don't know whether I'll be a wrench tonight. I've been doing this stuff for a while, you know, for... I have some stories I want to tell you. You know, on my way over here, I don't do a lot of planning as to what I'm going to say, which is probably better for me. So I'm somehow torn when I want to talk about that. You know, I love the book. I love the material. I love the big book. I'll probably read a few things out of it so you get some pure AA. Part of the 12-step, anybody ever remember ABC's Wild World of Sports?
Yes.
You know, for those of you, I mean, it's been off the air for a long time, but for those of you, I guess you'd have to be in your 50s or something. I don't know. They used to have, at the beginning, they'd say, the announcer would say, the thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. And what they would do is they'd show this guy, I'll never forget, they'd show this guy going down a ski slope. And he looked great, traveling like about 100 miles per hour going down the slope. And then all of a sudden he hit the bottom. And he started twirling around like a top until he hit the trees. And, you know, part of 12-step work is the thrill of victory, and part of it is the agony of defeat. And, you know, part of me wants to talk about aspects of 12-step work and working with others that's heartbreaking. Because your heart will be broken. A lot of times. But there's another part of me that remembers, for the most part, how wonderful it is to, what I believe, is perform God's work and to help other alcoholics. And so I tend to want to tonight maybe talk about that stuff. I want to read a few things from the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and this isn't meant to, I'm just going to talk about my experience. It's just my stuff, okay? I hope you don't take it as bragging or look at what I've done or what I'm doing. I just, in order to need to tell you what this means to me, I've got to sort of relate to you how I got involved in it, how I've come through this in the last 32 years and what I do with my life. I mean, obviously, I do a lot of this stuff now. I mean, I sponsor a lot of guys and I have a lot of grand sponsees. You know, when you've been around for 32 years, I mean, I have men in my life now that have wives and families and kids, and they've got 25, 26, 27 years, 29 years, in one case 30 years. They're 30 years sober, and I've been sponsoring them for 30 years. I mean, I have actual men in my life that have got 30 years, and I've been sponsoring them for 30 years. And they got wives, and they got kids, and they're doing well, and they got their own franchise going with their own sponsees and their sponsees. And, you know, I get guys that come up to me, and they say, you don't know me, but I'm a great, great grand sponsee of yours, you know. And not in a vain way, but it's sort of like a neat thing when you realize that when you sponsor one person, And it's really God that does all the work. You have to give him all the credit. But when you try to do his work and try to do his will and, you know, allow him to work through you and, you know, and you know, I always point, we always point them towards the Creator who's the one who's really doing it. You know, because, listen, I don't take credit for anybody's sobriety. And I'll tell you something, I don't take credit, nor do I feel guilty if somebody doesn't stay sober. You know, I mean, this is just, you know, I just do the best I can with what I've got, and it's really up to them and their relationship with God as to what's going on. And it's just a wonderful, wonderful experience. You know, the 12th step in the big book on working with others, and I'm going to stick a little bit close to this chapter as I relate some of the experiences I had later on and how I got into this, because how I got into 12-step work and working with others is really through my sponsors. I mean, I was just trained a certain way. I think this is true because it was true for me. A lot of what you're going to get involved in as far as 12-step work and how you're going to work your program is going to certainly depend upon where your desire is. You know, I got guys come up to me all the time and they sort of blame their sobriety or lack of sobriety or how they're doing or how they're not doing on their sponsor, you know? Well, I've been around long enough to know you decide who's going to sponsor you. You're the one who picks your sponsor, and you're the one who decides whether you're going to listen to your sponsor or not. And nobody knows how to blame other people for their problems more than an alcoholic. So I don't buy into the fact that it's my sponsor's fault or I don't have a good sponsor or any of that stuff because, you know, I've sponsored a lot of men. I've never kept count. They never told me how to keep count. I'm not one of these guys that believes you can only sponsor two or three, you know, or any of that stuff, you know. If somebody, I was told you never say no, you know, somebody asks you for help or to speak, you know, you do your deal. And I know how many times I've suggested things to people, and you know, I mean, you know, this thing is very, it's very interesting the way it works. You know, you know, I'll do these things all over the place, Broward County here, Palm Beach, you know, wherever. And generally, I get people come up to me after the meeting, and they'll say, "Will you sponsor me?" I'll say, "Sure, yeah, why not?" Absolutely. And I'll say, "Okay, what do? I say, "Well, Saturday morning we're having a meeting down in Miami, and why don't you just come on down?" He says, "Man, that's kind of far." or they say, "Okay, I'll be there," and then they never show up. Or they say, "I'll be there," and they show up, but they never show up again. In this fellowship, let me tell you something. This isn't Well People's Anonymous. When all is said and done, there'll be a lot more said than done. Just because somebody swears on a stack of Bible they're going to really do this thing this time, don't you believe it. Your heart will break, you know what I mean? It's not in the talking, it's in the doing. You know, and so I just want to read a few things. First of all, I want to read this first part, which I believe is absolutely true. This book is so true. I found it to be true throughout my life. It says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And that's absolutely true. Now I'm gonna rephrase it to something else that I've found is absolutely true. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from thinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. Because I'm looking at you guys, and you guys don't look like you have a drinking problem. But I think if I was to sit down and talk to you about your problem, I'll bet it would have something to do with your brain. I'll bet it would have something to do with the way you're thinking, what you think about things. I'll bet if you're ever nervous, anxious, irritable, scared, anxiety-ridden, worried, I'll bet if you ever get into that state once or twice or 10 or 50 times during the day, I'll bet if I was to ask you, you know, just interrogate you, I'd find out that you've never been nervous or upset or worried where it wasn't preceded by a whole lot of thinking. I mean, I'll bet you guys have never been worried about something like out of the blue. I'll bet you tend to worry about stuff that you think about. It's probably 9 out of 10 of stuff you think about probably isn't even going to happen. Probably never did happen. If the one thing that's going to happen is probably going to happen differently, but it doesn't stop you from thinking. I'll bet there are people in here that think about stuff that make, and I'll bet the stuff you think about is bad stuff about yourself and other people. And bad, I'll bet you don't think about good things about your life. I'll bet your tendency is to think about bad crap in your life. I'll bet if you're an alcoholic, you have a tendency to focus in on the problems you have, not on the good stuff you have. You know, that fly in the ointment, you know what I mean? I'll bet that's what you sort of think about, you know? You think about the flat tire, but you don't think about the fact that you got a car. You know what I mean? I mean, you think about that you're behind your mortgage, but you don't think about the fact that you actually have a house. You understand what I mean? You think about the fact that, you know, you have cancer, but you don't really concentrate on the fact that you actually have a doctor that you can go to. I'll bet your tendency is to think about the problems you have in your life. I'll bet some of you think you have a lot of problems. You know, and you wish your problems would go away. And, you know, I mean, if you're an alcoholic, you think about stuff a lot. And it sort of takes a little, you know, a little of that spin off your fastball. And I'll bet there are people in here who've even been worried about stuff for a long period of time. And I'll bet you even say to yourself sometimes things like this: I got to stop thinking about this. Yeah, you ever say to yourself, you know, something that's been bothering you, you've been thinking about, and you come to a realization. Here's the realization, something like this. This thing's driving me crazy. Thinking about it ain't helping it. I got to stop thinking about it. And then 5 minutes later, you think about it again, don't you? You don't know how to stop thinking about it. You think about stuff the way you used to drink. You think about stuff against your will. Bad stuff about yourself and other people. It makes you uncomfortable. You know, men and women drink because they like the effect produced by alcohol. They're restless, they're irritable, they're discontent unless they can again experience a sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once by taking a few drinks. So if you can't drink over it, then you know what happens? You don't get the sense of ease and comfort, which comes at once. You're just restless, irritable, and discontented, but you get to pick up a medallion. And that's the kind of sobriety you can have, if that's what you want. Or you can experience much of heaven and be rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence. You can have that deal. It's really up to you. Practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from thinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. And that's true. Here's a little line I like that Bill Wilson wrote down in talking about his testimony, which I've also found out to be true, which I think has to do with alcoholic thinking. This is on page 15 of the book in his story. He says, "My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution of their problem." Now I want to read, you know, they have lines in this book. You know, it's a big book. It is a big book that's composed of a lot of sentences. And we read these sentences and we go on and we think we've read the book, but maybe we should spend about 3 weeks on one line. So let's just spend time on that one line. You know, because doesn't it say, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path? Does it say that? Rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Is that what it says? Okay, so let's look at this one sentence in a book of 164 pages. My wife and I abandoned ourselves. Abandoned ourselves. What is that? Abandoned? What do you think that means? Abandoned? Does it mean once in a while? Every once in a while? You know, it's like that word utterly. Utterly, you know, in the book. Because, you know, you believe in God, and how you believe in God and how you throw yourself and surrender yourself to God has a lot to do with how you abandon yourself to other people. Because, you know, it says later on in the 12 steps, you got to be like the good Samaritan, the good Arab. You know that's a quote from something that Jesus Christ said. I think it's in the book of Luke, when he's asked, how do you inherit eternal life? And they used the word the good Samaritan. You got to be the good Samaritan every day. And you wouldn't even know what the good Samaritan is. You could guess at it through the vernacular and say, well, I think it's a good person. It's not a good person. It's something else altogether. And in order to find out what the good Samaritan is, you'd have to read the same book they were reading. They were reading the Holy Bible. And he says, you've got to be the good Samaritan every day. In order to find out what the good Samaritan is, you'd have to read that. And I'm not going to tell you what the good Samaritan is. But the good Samaritan is more than just being a good person every once in a while. Because there were some good people in the good Samaritan, the story of the good Samaritan. There was a priest in the story of the good Samaritan. There was a righteous person in the story of the good Samaritan. And they were not like the good Samaritan. The good Samaritan was different. The good Samaritan was different. And what Jesus said, he says, you got to be the good Samaritan. Be the good Samaritan. And you know what Bill Wilson says? You got to be the good Samaritan every day. I'm not going to tell you what the Good Samaritan is. You're going to have to read the same book they read to find out what the Good Samaritan is. But I'll give you a hint of what the Good Samaritan is. It's somebody who abandons themselves. You know, in the book Alcoholics Anonymous and how it works, it says this. It says this. These are the kind of words they use. They use these fanatical words, words that alcohol, you know, alcoholics, we want to do it. What are we, half measures? What do half measures avail you in here? Nothing. Nothing. This is a, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people that want to do it halfway. You know, the sixth step says this is the step that separates the men from the boys. What are the men? It says the men, a well-loved clergyman says, is those who are constantly and repeatedly over their lifetime trying to grow in the image and likeness of their creator. That's not something I made up. That's what it says in the 12 and 12. That's the test for the men. If you're not trying to grow in the image and likeness of your creator, you know what you are? You're one of the boys. So if you think in Alcoholics Anonymous, the separation is like a 50-50 thing, I think you would be wrong. I think it's more like a 97%, 3% deal, you know? So here's what it says right here in how it works. It says when it talks about the third step, and it says when we sincerely took such a position, after we do the third step prayer, it says we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready, that we could at last abandon ourselves. There's that word again, abandon ourselves utterly to him. Abandon ourselves utterly to him. Last night I did something similar to this on the 11th step at the Sable Palms group. Today I'm with you guys. This morning I was at a Bible study. Tomorrow morning at 10:15 I'll be at South Miami Hospital at the big meeting there, the big group. And I'll be talking to those guys. My friend tells me there'll be about 90 patients there, and I'll be talking to them. I don't know, how do you think they'll feel if I talk to them about abandoning themselves utterly to God? They're just trying to get out of that 28-day program so they can rip, rob, rape, and get back to what they were doing, you know? Well, I don't blame them. I understand that deal from where they're at. I get that, okay? And I'm sure that's where I was at and everything like that. But the bottom line is that when we come in here, for many, many years, a lot of us are willing to throw in exactly what we have to and no more and no less. I only need to go to 3 meetings to stay sober. Because most of us think about this thing as this is just the don't drink and go to meetings program. Just don't drink and go to meetings. This isn't about going crazy. Oh yeah, I know that guy Russell. He's crazy. Don't be like, Russell's crazy. He's like, he wants you to be crazy. His whole life is AA. You know? Well, listen. They're still trying to figure out what Bill Wilson did after he came to AA for a living. You know what I mean? Their whole life was this deal. My wife and I abandoned ourselves with enthusiasm. So first of all, they abandoned themselves. What does that mean? Abandon themselves. Does that mean I'm sorry I can't go to a meeting because I have to go to work? Does that mean I'm sorry I can't go to a meeting because I got to go to the basketball game? Does that mean I can't to the Super Bowl? That means they abandoned themselves with enthusiasm because they were excited to do it. Remember the Bill Wilson line? The Lord has been so wonderful to me, curing me of this terrible disease, that I got to keep talking about it and telling other people. He was gaga over this stuff. With enthusiasm to the idea of helping other alcoholics to a solution to their problem. His whole life was devoted, became devoted. Everything else took on second place dimensions. That's what he did. It was fortunate, and this is early on. This is in the beginning. It was fortunate for my old business associates remained skeptical for a year and a half. For 18 months, they remained skeptical, during which time I found little work. He was broke. He found little work. Nobody trusted him. He abandoned himself to this thing. I was not too well at the time and was plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. Plagued by waves. This is Bill Wilson. Plagued by waves of self-pity and resentment. Mad at other people, mad at himself, mad at the world, and feeling sorry for himself. And I am a recovered self-pityaholic. Anything worth happening around me is worth feeling sorry for myself. Poor me, poor me, pour me a drink. This sometimes nearly drove me back to drink. But I soon found that when all other measures failed, work with another alcoholic would save the day. Many times I have gone to my old hospital in despair. In despair. On talking to a man there, I would be amazingly lifted up and set on my feet. It is designed for living that works in rough going. They asked Bill Wilson, what do you think of people that don't drink and don't go to meetings? He says, I have no use for them. They have no gratitude. I can't tell you how many people I've had come up to me with 3, 5, 10, 15 years sobriety, fessing up to the fact that they're not doing well, that they feel crappy, or whatever it is. Maybe they want me to sponsor them, and I'll ask them just a couple of questions. But one of the questions I ask them, I say, how many people are you sponsoring? And you know what the answer is? None. How do you stay in this program for 15 years or 5 years or even 3 years and not sponsor somebody? How does that happen? You know how that happens? Because you're not working a program of recovery and you're selfish. And you only care about yourself and you only care about your feelings. Because you're focused on your feelings and how you feel, and that's the only thing that's important. And if you feel good, why sponsor anybody? You feel good and you're here because you're yourself anyway. You're not really working the program they're working. You're working the not drink, go to meetings program. You're just here for yourself. It has nothing to do with any transformation. It has nothing to do with growing in the image, likeness, your creator. You're using this program the same way you use scotch, the same way you use pills, the same way you use coke. This program and the meetings and the people in this meeting is just something for you to use instead of drugs, because you can't be arrested for going to AA meetings. And you don't give a crap about anybody. All you care about is your feelings. And if you're feeling bad and you're feeling crappy, why sponsor anybody to do anything? What you're going to meetings for is so that you will feel better. And try to get a little rustle or a little this or a little that, so it'll lift you up on your feet, and then you'll feel better and say, I got my fix, and then you can go on. Because the last thing you're interested in is in helping anybody or going to the image and likeness of your creator. You just want to drink. But you know you can't drink, so you go to a meeting instead. And it has nothing to do with any transformation. And you will never, ever realize the sobriety that you need to realize in this thing in order to be rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. And that's 95% of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. That's why most people in Alcoholics Anonymous don't sponsor people, don't do service, don't do anything. And I can't blame their sponsors, even though some of their sponsors don't point them to do it, because they pick the sponsors they want to pick that don't tell them to get off your ass and start making coffee and start sponsoring people. We go with the people we want to go with that don't challenge us and don't confront us. We go with the people that are our friends and don't hurt our feelings, because we're sensitive. You know, and I didn't come here for that kind of crap, to hear that kind of crap. But unless you're willing to make the incredible changes that are necessary to be made, your personality will never change. You'll just be you won't be a drinking or active alcoholic. You'll just be a sober alcoholic who is not experiencing recovery. You're just experiencing AA or something like AA. You know, because that's what will end up happening. So here's the deal with me. For whatever reason, and I don't take it, I'm not saying because look how good I am, I somehow either was attracted to certain people or I wound up with certain sponsors who were actively involved in service, of all types of service. You name it, they were involved in it. No matter what I was talking to them about, no matter what was going on in my life, some way, somehow, I was turned towards service, which made no sense to me whatsoever. Or if I was hanging around them, I was involved in 12-step work because they were involved. I was either in a car, driving somebody somewhere, going somewhere. That's how I did AA. I was with a sponsor who picked me up like 2 hours before the meeting. We'd go pick up another guy. We'd go out to dinner, talk to the new guy, then go to a meeting. Then afterwards, we'd hang out with the new guy. That's how I thought AA was. To this day, that's the way I do it. I drove down here with four other guys. I picked up Richard, then we picked up this guy, and then that's the way I do AA. I don't know of any other way of doing AA except in fellowship with getting other people and talking to other people and sponsoring other people. I don't know of any other way. You know, and I know that majority of people in AA don't do it that way. They're in their bedroom, they decide to go to a meeting or not. They get in their car, they drive to a meeting, and then they leave the meeting and they go back home. And that's AA to them. But that's not what these guys were doing. That's not rarely have we seen it from St. Phil has thoroughly fought our path. Now, I go up to my sponsor, and I've got about 3 months or whatever the heck I've got, and, you know, just long enough so that the newness of not drinking has worn off. I'm starting to get used to it. I'm sort of excited about it. But all of a sudden, life starts, you know, all of a sudden you start realizing life is still going on. I don't know, I probably got a Florida Power and Light bill, and I said, oh, my, I can't believe this is still happening, you know? I still have to pay the bills. I still have to go to work. And now I got to pay the bills, and now I got to go to work, and now I got to put up with all these people and put up with all the traffic and all the bad stuff that's going on, and I don't have my blankie. I don't have my drink. And I went up to my sponsor, and I complained about something. The money. How about money's is good. Money's a good thing to do. I complained about the money. I complained about the finances. I probably complained about my wife. Because I joined, you know, when I came in here, I initially joined the Fellowship of the Thumbsucking Crybabies, believe me. I was right there at the discussion meetings talking about the drama. You know what I mean? I was either listening to somebody else's drama or talking about my own drama. You wouldn't believe what happened to me today. I can't believe what happened to me. I can't believe what my boss did today. I was intricately focused on and involved in my life and what was happening to me and my problems and sharing it with you so that you could give me the help and I could get the help to try to figure out how I could get more money or not lose my house or not lose this or not lose that. And then we'd finish talking about me and then it would go on to you. And then the next one would share. And it seemed to me like everybody in AA was sharing about their problems except that one guy, you know, my sponsor. And he never seemed to be talking about his problems. He was always helping people. I didn't know what was going on with him, you know. He probably had all the money in the world and everything like that. He probably didn't have any problems. Of course, I hung around long enough to realize he was dying of cancer and he had all sorts of stuff going on, but it didn't seem to bother him. He just had a certain stability about him that the other people didn't have. So I go up to this guy and I tell him about my problem, my flavor of the day, my problem for the day. You know, probably not much different than any problem you guys are working on today. And this is what he says to me. You know, I mean, I don't know what kind of sponsor you have. I did not have the kind of sponsor where I'd say, I need $5,000 or else they're going to take away my house. And he'd say, oh, let me write you a check for $5,000. I didn't have that kind of sponsor. So he would say to me this. After I was done talking about my problem, he would say, you know, I think it's time you started making coffee for the group. Now, has anybody here ever had money problems? Yeah, any have money problems? Yeah, okay. So now you know when you have money problems, I mean, I'm talking about serious problems. I'm talking about you're going to lose your house, the IRS is going to put you in jail. You know, I don't know about you, but whenever I have a problem, it always winds up in death or jail. There's no probation, you know what I mean? It's either I'm going to die, be out on the street, or be in jail, or something terrible is going to happen, you know what I mean? And as a matter of fact, I don't know whether you guys know this, but the entire government, the entire IRS, is there for one purpose. They're funding them just to look at me, just to get me, you know what I mean? They're just running all those numbers right now, you know, and all I can do is think about myself and thinking about bad things about myself and what's going to happen. If you're an alcoholic, you're thinking that way. Let me tell you something, it's a horrible experience. You know, and so when you go up to somebody and finally pour out your heart, because, I mean, the hardest thing for an alcoholic man to do, I don't know about a woman, is to talk about how he needs money or he's broke because that has something to do with your manhood or, you know, to ask for help and everything like that. So when you go up to somebody and you tell them, listen, I can't pay my mortgage, I can't pay my light bill, I can't do this, I don't know what's got my wife and kids and blah, 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 they're going to starve, I can't even afford to put gas in my car, you expect like a little relief, you know what I mean? You expect to here's $500, here's that, you know, sometimes do this, you can get money. You don't, I mean, he's my sponsor. I mean, what do you mean? It's about time you start making coffee for the group. It's like the guy's not even listening to me. It's like there's two separate conversations going on here. You know what I mean? I'm talking about the real world with real problems, and he's talking about making coffee for a group of alcoholics. And I think we can all agree there's absolutely no connection, right? None, zero. But there's like no talking to a guy like this because there's nobody else to talk to when he's talking about making coffee. He says, yeah, starting next week, you're going to make the coffee. Let me show you how to do it. So I says, you know, what are you going to do? I mean, the conversation is over. So you start making the coffee, and he shows you how to make the coffee, and you show up early to make the coffee. I mean, you're going to kill yourself. You know you're going to kill. You know you're going to die. You know your life is over. But even though your life is over and you know you're going to die, you still got to get to the meeting because you got to make the coffee or else there won't be any coffee and you're gone. You know what I mean? So you're thinking about how you're going to die and how your life is over, but you're also thinking that you got to get to the meeting because you're supposed to make the coffee. So you make the coffee and you get the coffee and you get it all set up and you go to the meeting. And sometimes you even say, I don't feel like going to the meeting tonight. I'm like depressed. I feel crappy. I can't go to the meeting. I got too much stuff on my mind. And then you remember, but I got to make the coffee. You know what I mean? I mean, you got, and I can't get anybody else to make the coffee. So I got to be there. You know what I mean? So I go there and maybe I hear something, I do something. And the next thing I know, all I know is like a week goes by or 2 weeks go by or 3 weeks go by. And all of a sudden, everything's wonderful. Whatever thing was bothering me, it changed. You know, the IRS wrote a letter saying, sorry, we're not going to kill you today. You know what I mean? Or something happens. I don't go to jail, or something happens, or a new problem, you know, where I'm talking, I'm feeling better. And then next thing I know, I'm making coffee for 18 months. Guys come up to me and say, well, let me make the coffee. And I says, hey, that's my job. I'm the coffee maker around here. Finally, I go up to him and I say, you know, I've been making coffee for this stupid group for 18 months. I'm tired of making coffee. I can't make the coffee anymore. I can't make the coffee. He says, and so you go into the group. You go to the group conscience. You say, I won't be able to make the coffee anymore. Who will volunteer to take it from me? And nobody raises their hands. Now what are you going to do? Now you're stuck with the coffee forever. I'm stuck making coffee for the Killing Pines group forever. And now I got a real problem, you know? I didn't sign on this job forever to make coffee for these selfish, self-centered alcoholics. Because no one, you know why? Because nobody wants to do service and nobody wants to make the coffee. I'm the only guy unlucky enough to have a stupid... I didn't even want to do it. But unfortunately, I'm the only guy unlucky enough to have a stupid, idiot sponsor who went up when I was vulnerable and thought I was going to die... forced me to make coffee. And there's nobody else that has a sponsor like that, so I can't get rid of the coffee. So now I have to go up to my sponsor. Now I got a real problem. I say, I can't get rid of the coffee job. So he says, Russell, he says, listen, these are alcoholics. He says, don't expect them to volunteer to take over the coffee. They're not going to do it. They're selfish. They want somebody to do it for them. Don't announce that you need somebody to take over the coffee. Just stop making the coffee. Because you're codependent. Stop making the coffee. Just don't make it. You know what I mean? Say, I'm not making the coffee next week and don't make it. Somebody will start making the coffee. And that's exactly what happened. That's how, and you know what I learned? I learned something about, guess what I learned about? I learned about alcoholism. I learned about alcoholism in you. I learned about alcoholism in me. No sense getting upset. I learned new facets of this disease that I never knew before. You see, now that I am an alcoholic, and now I'm an admitted alcoholic, and now that I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous and hanging out with you guys who are the salt of the earth, I mean, all righteousness resides in here, I just think that the greatest people in the world are in Alcoholics Anonymous. What's this selfish, self-centered stuff? We're all great people. The selfish people are out there, the earth people. We're like spiritual, not religious, and all that sort of stuff. And all of a sudden I started saying, man, this is the most selfish group of people sober. Sober, these people aren't so well. You know what I mean? You got some real problems in here sober. Now, it looks real good to me because I'm an alcoholic. I'm one of them. My alcoholic life seems the only normal one. So this looks like the height of ones. But really, most alcoholics are selfish, self-centered, even when they're sober. There ain't people tripping over themselves to make coffee or help other people or do that. Most people are in here just for themselves and their feelings and to feel better and to catch a few meetings so they don't have to drink and have to put up with anybody. And so that's the deal. I mean, I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just telling you, hey, listen, the truth will set you free, but first it'll piss you off, you know? But while working with other people and dealing with other people, you start understanding more about the disease in them. You start understanding more about the disease in you. That's what working with other people does. It not only gets you out of yourself, it gets you to see more of different facets of the disease. So when you see it in other people, you can say, that's me. I was like that. And almost every bit of service I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous that I can actually recollect, I never thought up myself. I mean, the stuff that I ended up doing in here, it was never one of these things like, I have an idea, I'll do this. I was never, ever, no matter how enthusiastic, in this thing for extra credit. I was always going to do just as much as I needed to do in order to stay sober and not an inch more. Anything I did in here, which looked like it was for other people, was because some sponsor said, why don't you go out and sponsor somebody? Why don't you go out and look? Because some sponsor suggested or ordered me to do this. You know, this group needs a secretary. Why don't you become the secretary of the group? Why don't you become like the intergroup representative? You know, why don't you go, I want you to go out 12-step calling with me. I want you to do, you know, I want you to go here. I want you to, it was always because somebody else told me, because I had a sponsor or a mentor or somebody who said, you need to do this. And I did it. I don't even know why I did it. You know, I have sponsored people and I've told them. I'm not stupid. I tell them, I say, you need to sponsor people. You need to start sponsoring people. And they don't do it. I'm not the AA police. I can't force somebody to do it. And, you know, I'll tell you something. I remember a guy that I sponsored. I still sponsor him today. I'll tell you how insidious this disease is. We have a book that says practical experience shows that people can stay sober. The thing that they'll keep you sober most is intensive work with alcoholics. What kind of work with alcoholics? Intensive work with alcoholics. As a matter of fact, if you look at working with others, when they start talking about it, this is the way they describe it. They describe the kind of work you're supposed to do. It says, helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. Did you know it's the foundation stone? Helping others? A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You know what that means? It means, you ready for this? A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. It ain't enough. It ain't enough to, on the street, you give the guy the dollar who says hungry looking for food. It ain't enough that once in a while in a meeting you try to help someone. It ain't enough. A kindly act every once in a while isn't enough. Now I understand. I get it. I know you believe it should be enough. I know you want to prove to me mathematically it really is enough. You know, but it ain't enough. Because the book Alcoholics Anonymous says it ain't enough. It says you have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be. And here's what they say the Good Samaritan looks like. It may mean loss of many nights' sleep. Many nights' sleep over helping other alcoholics. Great interference with your pleasures. When was the last time you put off going to a movie? You put off watching a football game? You put off doing things you wanted to do because you had to go talk to somebody you sponsor, or you had to go take somebody to detox, or you had to do stuff like that. And if the answer is never, you're just not doing what these people are doing. And I don't want to hear, well, you haven't had the opportunity because nobody asked you. And nobody's asking you because you're not raising your hands at meetings, and you're not talking up at meetings, and you're not going up to people at meetings and saying, I'll help you. You're not volunteering for it. You're just sort of sitting back in a corner and saying, well, if they want me, they'll find me back here in the corner. If, you know? Great interference with your pleasures. Interruptions of your businesses. How many people have left the job or left their businesses as opposed to most people in Alcoholics Anonymous says, I can't do that, I got to work. How many people have put their business and their work on the line to help another alcoholic? It may mean sharing your money and your home, counseling frantic wives and relatives, innumerable trips to police courts. That means, I think, more than once. Sanitariums, hospital, jails, and asylums. Your telephone may jangle at any time, the day or night. Your wife may sometimes say she is neglected. That's like my wife's song. I've been married 32 years. 32 years of, I can't believe, where are you going now? Well, I'm going wherever I'm going to the same place I go every Thursday night. I'm going to the Little River Group, you know, where I've been going for the last 12 years, because that's what wives do. They say, where are you going? Because that's what they do. And that's what I do. That's what I do. You don't have to do that. You know, because my wife, when I was 6 months sober, said to me, what if I told you if you go to that meeting, I won't be here. I'm leaving. And I don't even know where this came from because I only had 6 months. I wasn't exactly bright or anything. I said, I love you and I hope you're here, but I'm going to the meeting. I love you. I hope you're here. I really do. But I'm going to the meeting because somehow, some way, I knew in my mind that if I put my wife before the meeting, I wouldn't have my wife. That if I wanted my wife and I wanted my kids and I wanted my self-respect and I wanted my self-esteem, I could not sacrifice my integrity because she was jealous or because she, was needy or because of whatever it was, because once I did it once, then the next time it would be easier. And the third time when I said I have to go, she'd say, well, you didn't go last week. Because I'd be a hypocrite. And she'd be right. I knew that that was a line that I had to put in the sand. And you know how many guys I've sponsored that can't do that? You know, they say underneath every skirt is a slip. You know how many guys I've sponsored that stay away from AA or miss meetings because they have an excuse because they got us because of their wives? Instead of being men in the house and somebody who's focused on God and focused what's important, okay, they let the woman or the other person basically dictate to them. And you know what happens to those marriages? They go down the tubes. They go down the tubes. They drink again. And the first one that gets upset about the drinking is the wife. And the first one to forget about how important AA is the wife or the husband or the other party. You want to know something? But it isn't for them to remember. It isn't for them to, it's for the person who's the alcoholic or the addict to understand how important this is. You know, there's a reason why Bill Wilson said your wife may sometimes say she is neglected, because his wife probably said that. And every wife who's ever been in AA, her husband said, I'm neglected. What are you leaving me for? A drunk may smash your furniture in your home or burn a mattress. You may have to fight with him if he is violent. Sometimes you will have to call a doctor, administer sedatives under his direction. Another time you may have to send for police or an ambulance. Occasionally you will have to meet all these conditions. You start looking at your sobriety. You're sober 5 years, 10 years, 15 years. How much service you involved in? You know, if you're honest with yourself, you're going to say, I don't do nothing. I'm like most of the people in AA. I just show up for meetings and I take. I give nothing. Zero. Nothing back. And then you worry about why you feel the way you feel and why you're not getting what these guys got when you really don't care about anybody else or giving back service or doing God's will. It says in the book, it says, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happened. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He gives us everything we need if we stay close to him and perform his work well. And most people could give a crap about his work. They want to talk about their problems and what they want to do, what they want to, how they want to manage their life and what's wrong with their life, and they could give a crap about performing God's work. And I don't even know why I got involved in doing... And you know, here's the weird thing. You know, it says, see to it that your relationship with him is right and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. Here's what I don't. I had somebody come up to me the other day, you know, and they said, I don't understand how you do it. How can you raise 4 children, have 6 grandchildren, have an active law practice, you know, with serious cases, you know what I mean? And go to AA meetings almost every night and sponsor all these people and all this sort of stuff. And I said to him, I said, you know, I don't know how I do it, but I do it. I don't know. I don't have a clue how I do it. I don't have a clue how I do it. You know, I mean, I just show up. I just go here. I go here. I do that. There's plenty of time during the day. I manage to do it because that's my life. I've wrapped my life around AA and it works and God has rewarded me and I'm not starving and everything's okay. And it happens. You know, why don't you trust God? Why do you think you have to manage your life so well and you have to put your life together a certain way so well and run around trying to, why don't you trust him if you do his work? You know, and it's all because of sponsorship. Really, it's really all because of sponsorship, because my sponsor would take me around to these detox meetings. He'd take me around to 12-step people to bring people to detox and all sort of stuff. People picking people up. And I remember one day, I don't even know where this came from. It was a Saturday morning. It was like I woke up at like 4 o'clock in the morning, worried about pick a number, money, romance, you know, just pick whatever you want to pick out, whatever you worry about. I was worried about it. I don't know where this idea came from. I did what Bill Wilson did. I don't know whether I read it or my sponsor told me. I got in my car, I drove down to 27th Avenue. They had a detox meeting at 8:30. You know, the guys all show up in one of those pajamas or whatever it is they wear with the back is open. You know, the guys, they let me in because I was from AA. I had maybe like 4 months, 3 months. I walked in there. Of course, they asked me to do the meeting because I got like 3 months. I'm the guy with the longest sobriety. And okay, I do the meeting, and I'm looking at these guys, and you know, they're most of them are shaking, you know, and things like that. And we do a meeting. We have a great meeting, you know. And I walked out of there. I was like him. I was amazingly lifted on my feet. I was high. I said, "This is the greatest thing in the world." And I caught the bug. Helping other people is the greatest thing in the world. Next thing I know, I'm walking the halls of South Miami Hospital on Christmas Eve. On New Year's Eve, I'm walking the halls of South Miami Hospital, member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Did you know you could do that? I don't know if you can do it now, but that's what I was doing it then. All of a sudden, I see in one room, it's all dark, and I see a guy's profile. You could see it in the glass. You know, he's sitting next to a window, and you see a profile of what looks like a man. I sort of walked in there. It was a guy who's my age. And he was sitting there, and I start talking to him, and I said, I'm from Alcoholics Anonymous, and we're both the same age. He starts telling me how his wife left him, he took his kids, how his life was over. And I start talking to him. I just say, listen, I want to tell you something, buddy. I said, it's going to be okay. The same thing happened to me. This is what happened to me. I tell him my story. I tell him my testimony. I said, I want to tell you something. You don't drink. You go to meetings. You do what you got to do and everything like that. It's all going to be wonderful. You're going to be fantastic. He starts crying. He says, I can't tell you how much you helped me. I walk out of there. I'm like lifted up on my feet, you know? I'm like, I'm feeling this is the greatest thing in the world. You know, it's funny, I was the only guy there, and I didn't see 50 people from Alcoholics Anonymous there. It was open to everybody. I'm sitting with a guy at Denny's, a new guy that I brought to a meeting at Denny's. After the meeting, it's like, you know, it's like 10 o'clock. I'm having apple pie and ice cream or whatever it is, and he's eating, he's a brand new guy, you know what I mean? He says, hey, that meeting was pretty good. And he says, what do you guys do for fun? And I didn't have the heart to tell him I was having a great time. You know what I mean? I didn't. How am I going to tell the kid, this is it? This is like the Olympics in Alcoholics Anonymous. Sitting with guys talking about life. You know what I mean? He wouldn't have known what I was talking about. One day I was 5 years sober. And I can't even tell you all this stuff. One day I'm 5 years, 6 years, 7 years, whatever it was. I can't remember. And they get me involved in Relay. My sponsor says, you know, you ought to get involved in Relay. I don't know, you know, they have a Relay thing at Intergroup where you take certain calls. So I got involved with the Relay. I was the Friday night guy. If you called up in Dade County and you're an alcoholic or anybody and you needed help and you called up Alcoholics Anonymous, it would go to my home phone from 11 o'clock at night till 8 o'clock the next morning. Anybody who called up Alcoholics Anonymous in Miami-Dade County, they would get me, which is... I had that job for 9 years. I couldn't get rid of it. You know, it was like the coffee gig. You know what I mean? Do you know what it's like having that job for not... You know how much... Yeah, and many times I would meet the people. I'd talk to them, meeting me or something like that. You know what it's like working... I mean, that's intensive work without... You know what it's you know the education you get? I remember getting a call from one... You get called the most amazing calls. You know, most of them don't want to get sober. Most of them are just lonely. You know, for the first 3 years, you learn how not to stay up for 3 hours talking to some guy and then saying, well, do you want to stop drinking? He says, no, I don't want to stop drinking. You know what I mean? They just sort of keep you on the phone. You're talking about everything in the world. And they say, could you excuse me a second? And he says, yeah. And you hear clink, 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 clink. You know, they're just lonely. You know, I remember talking to one guy. He called me up. He says, I need to get to detox. I said, so I told him that this one on 27th Avenue. He says, well, can you send a cab? Or can you pick me up or something like that? Can you drive me? I said, no, this isn't a cab company. This is Alcoholics Anonymous. He says, well, that's not the way we do it in Connecticut. He's an alcoholic. And he goes, what's your name? I said, Russell. Russell what? I said, just tell him Russell. I'm the only guy. I said, you're not going to report me, are you? I mean, I'd hate to lose this job, you know? Wanted to know what my name was, he was going to report me. I said, listen, I don't know how to tell you this, but the only reason I have this job is nobody else will take it, you know? I said, you start walking now, by 8 o'clock in the morning, you'll hit detox, you know? Some nurse calls me up, and, you know, this is 3 o'clock in the morning. You talk about wives, but she got used to it, you know what I mean? You talk about 3 o'clock in the morning, she calls me up and says, look, I'm a PhD in nursing. I've been to AA. I've been sober 2 years. I got a little child, I'm a single mother, I have a good job, and I lose my job, and I'm a little worried. I'm a little worried, he says, because I started drinking again. And he says, I don't know what to do, I want to stop drinking. I'm scared I'll lose my job, and I'll lose my daughter, and everything like that. He says, but whatever you say, I don't want to hear about Alcoholics Anonymous. So I said, listen, I said, my name is Russell, whatever I am, I'm 5 years, 6 years sober, I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. I got sober in Alcoholics Anonymous. I have a sponsor. I go to Alcoholics Anonymous meetings. You called the Alcoholics Anonymous hotline. I said, I don't know. When you get on the phone with me and you say you want to stop drinking, but not to talk to you about Alcoholics Anonymous, that's like what we call a non-starter. You know what I mean? I don't know of any other way of getting sober except through Alcoholics Anonymous. You call me up, that's what I'm going to talk about. But this is the kind of stuff you hear for 8 years on the phone. And you learn about alcoholism and alcohol and what it does. But you do that for one reason, because once in a blue moon, you get that call from that guy. And he says, I need help. This is what he says. He doesn't talk a lot. You know, most alcoholics say things like, you got to listen. This is what they say. You got to listen to me. You got to listen to me. He said, did you know that there's an unwritten law that if an alcoholic talks, you've got to listen to him, because he's got something important. I said, no, I don't. I'm sleeping. You interrupt my sleeping, I'm going to sleep. Goodbye. Click. You know, I mean, I don't have to listen to you. Nobody has to listen to you. You're calling me up for help. But, you know, here's the deal. I learned real fast after 3 or 4 years. You know, I'd let him talk for 3 minutes, and then I'd say, let me ask you one question. Do you want to stop drinking? That's a real important question they ask alcoholics. Do you want to stop drinking? And then listen to what they say. Every once in a while, you get a call from somebody, and this is what they say. They say, listen, I need help. I can't stop drinking. And then you know what happens? You hear silence. You know why? You know why you hear silence? You know why an alcoholic stops talking? Because he's waiting to hear. You ready for this? What you have to say. Because he's interested in what you have to say. Because he's reached that point where he's beyond help and he needs help and he wants to know what he has to do in order to get sober. And I say, I can help you. And then you start talking about it and he listens to every word you say. Meet me at a meeting at 8 o'clock. He talks to you and he's there. Because that's why you stay on the phone for 8 years for that guy. That's why you sponsor people for that guy. You may sponsor 100 people or 200 people. You may only get 3 or 4 of those guys. You know what I mean? But that's what you do to get those guys. And it helps you. It keeps you sober. You learn about yourself. You know, I've got so many stories I could tell you. We're out of time, you know, about how incredible it is to work with other people. You know, and you know, you get a sponsor who sponsors people. You sponsor people. You know, there are people, and I want to say this, there are people, I suppose, that, you know, can't sponsor people. I think probably everybody can sponsor somebody. You can only give away, hey, you give away what you can give away. You can only, I have people that come up to me, guys I sponsor, and say, well, I wouldn't know what to say to them. If you ask me, I only have 2 years, I wouldn't know what to say to them. I'll say, so-and-so asked me to sponsor him, I don't know what to say. I says, well, if he asked you, it's because you have something he wants that you don't even know you have. You know? He says, well, what do I do? I said, well, listen, who sponsors you? He says, you sponsor me. I said, well, let's say he asks you a question and you don't know the answer. Can you say this? You know, I don't know the answer. Let's ask Russell. Maybe he knows. Can you do that? He says, yeah, I can do that. I said, well, then obviously you can help him. You know, you can always help some. You can always look for an excuse why not to do something, or you can decide you're going to do it and learn through experience. You know, that's what you have to do, learn through experience. And so if there's anything I want to tell you or say to you, it's that you want to really get involved in sponsoring people or doing service. Certainly standing behind the bar, and I've done that thing, I've made the coffee, I've stood behind the bar. There's so many ways you get picking up cigarette butts, being a member. There's so many ways you can do service for other people and get involved in serving other, because that's what the Lord wants you to do. I'm going to tell you something. He's a big server. You know why you're here? You know the only reason you're sober and you're here? Because he serves. Because he serves. Why should an almighty God care about you? Because he serves. Because he's a servant. Because you pray to him. You know what we do at the end of every meeting? We say the Lord's Prayer. You know why? Because he serves and we thank him. He serves us. You know, it's not that we do anything for him or he needs us. He serves us. He wants. He's looking for servers. He's not looking for selfish, you walk in here, you're selfish, you're self-centered in the extreme. Selfishness, self-centeredness. That's the root of the problem. We're driven by 100 forms of fear, self-delusion, self-seeking. We step on the toes of others, they retaliate. Usually, we're self-override, though we usually don't think so. Above everything, we got to get rid of this selfishness. We must, or it kills us. How do you get rid of selfishness? You stop thinking about yourself. How do you stop thinking about yourself? You start serving other people. You start thinking about other people. You put yourself in a position to think about other people. That's how you do it. You know, does it mean you have to work harder? Yes. Maybe go to more meetings? Yes. Maybe go out and take people to detox and do things you don't want to do? Yes. You know, I mean, I can't tell you that. I'm sorry, you're entitled to your own opinion, just not entitled to your own facts. That's what these guys did. That's what Bill Wilson did. That's what all my sponsors and all the guys, my mentors, did. If you ask me to do the steps at a meeting, and I get up here to do the steps, I'm going to tell you what I did. I'm not going to tell you stuff to do because I think you'll like it. As a matter of fact, I know that you're not going to like it. I've read the book Alcoholics Anonymous. I've sponsored enough people. I've been on that relay. I know that when I'm talking about the stuff I'm talking about, 80% of the people are saying, I don't need this bullshit. Even though they'll be polite and say, I appreciate the meeting, they'll go right out and they won't do it, and they say, I don't need that stuff. That's good for him. It's not good for me. I'm going to do, you do your program your way. I'll do my program my way. There's only one program. There's not 300 different programs. There's one program. It's in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It's mapped out specifically. Read Dr. Bob Goodall-Times. There's one program that gets you where you want to go if you want to be rocking to the fourth dimension and experience. There's one program. There's not a program where you don't drink and go to meetings and you don't sponsor or help other people. I mean, you're doing something, but it's not the program of alcohol. That's not the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. If that was the program, they wouldn't have a chapter in the book called Working with Others saying you've got to be. This isn't from me. This is from that you have to be the Good Samaritan every day. We wouldn't have that chapter if that was that if that was our program. So all I'm suggesting you guys is, you know, this is where finally we'll finish it up this way. What do they say? One of the things you need in order to really get this thing, the capacity to be honest. One of the biggest problems in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, my sponsors say the problem today is they get too well too fast. It's so easy when you're not drinking for a year or two or 5 or 10 years to pat yourself on the back and say, I'm doing the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because everything is based on the fact that you're dry. Yeah, you haven't been drinking, because that's what the group celebrate. You know what the groups ought to do? When you come up to pick up the trip, you have to tell the group the names of everybody you sponsor. That's what we ought to do in here. You ought to come up here and say, these are the people, my name's so-and-so, and these are the people I sponsor. If you have more than 5 years, they ought to do that. Just to humiliate you. Well, what's the new perception? How do we get a new perception? Through 100 forms of humiliation, the final question of our self-sufficiency. If they did that, would you get the absolute feeling that you need to sponsor people? That it's expected of you. But they don't do that in AA. All you have to do is say, I haven't had a drink, right? Which is fine. I'm not looking to change AA. But don't expect to have what these guys had if you're going to do it that watered down way. So what's the only thing you need? You need the capacity to be honest. That's what they say. So the capacity to be honest relates to more than just not drinking. It relates to the guy who's got 5 years, 10 years, 15 years to look at himself and say, you know something? I'm sober, but I'm not doing any of this stuff. And instead of excusing himself and saying, well, that's him, it's not me, and we all have our own program, say, maybe if I did this stuff, maybe my life would change. Maybe my feelings about myself would change. You know, maybe all of a sudden everything would change. And I'd grow in the image and likeness. That's what the capacity to be honest is about. You know, it's easy to realize you have to change when, you know, you got 15 DUIs and your wife kicks you out and you still got alcohol in your breath. It's a little more difficult when you got 10 years recovery and you think you're doing okay because you're picking up those medallions and you're not sponsoring anybody. You're not doing any of the stuff they're talking about in this book. And that's a little bit more difficult because, you know, because nobody's going to come up in here and take your inventory. Except somebody like me, and I'm not really even doing it. I'm just talking. You know, if you're sitting there and you're feeling guilty, it's because you are guilty. It's not because of me. I'm not making you feel guilty. You're guilty because you are guilty. You know, you throw a rock into a pack of dogs, the one that yells the loudest is the one that gets hit. You know, you go out there and start complaining about me, it has nothing to do with me. You might as well be saying, you know, he's talking about me because I'm not doing any of this stuff. Right? Okay, God bless you all. Thank you very much.